Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, and it's a real pleasure to have you today. Also a pleasure to continue our in-depth conversations with Dr. Mike Armour. Dr. Armour, as we've mentioned for decades, has compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor. Today, the cumulative wisdom gained from such broad experience puts him in constant demand as a keynote speaker, executive coach, and inspirational trainer in management, leadership, and cultural transformation. Businesses of every size seek out Dr. Mike to help them develop more professional leadership teams. As we've mentioned, you know, he knows point blank that leadership is something that is extraordinarily essential in any organization. And he points out that American Armed Forces understood leadership long before regular industry grasped it, because military command structures envision an orderly succession of leadership. What's really amazing, too, is his flagship entity, which he created, Strategic Leadership Development International, or SLDI, and its Leader Perfect services, which actually help companies and individuals achieve peak performance. I encourage you to go back in the last couple weeks of episodes, if you're just joining us for the first time, and sort of follow the train of thought and train of conversation we're having here, because everything is so interwoven and interlinked. He founded his flagship entity, SLDI, again, to help those companies achieve peak performance and individuals as well. As mentioned, or if you're learning for the first time, he's also an author who has written about people, management, culture, and diversity for over 30 years. He's releasing the second edition of his most widely read book in corporate America, Leadership and the Power of Trust book. We're looking forward to hearing more about that and lots more during this episode as we continue our exclusive series today, this particular episode with Dr. Mike Armour. Dr. Armour, thank you once again for joining us here on the program. Always a pleasure. Welcome back as we continue the series.
Great to be with you. I always look forward to these conversations.
I do as well, because I think, you know, a lot of people learn so much, and what we're talking about is relevant and topical, not just for these times, but for any time. We've been speaking with you for the past 2 weeks. Love it for those who are following along, and maybe for folks who could even be joining us for the first time, if we could possibly recap your experience, your background, and what you do as well, which actually is several things.
Yes, there are a few balls in the air most of the time. Well, I offer comprehensive leadership development services and have for 21 years here in the Dallas area, and chose to begin the firm after a lifetime of roles that were demanding leadership responsibilities. And those responsibilities ranged from senior positions in the Navy to higher education, where I was a dean and a college president, the international arena, where I have been the CEO of a humanitarian organization working in all of the former nations of the Soviet Union, and a number of nonprofits, leadership of large, dynamic urban congregations. All of those experiences included developing bench strength behind me, because I'm a firm believer that leaders have to be preparing the organization to continue without missing a beat if the leader is taken out of the picture. And so developing bench strength and preparing orderly succession plans has always been a priority for me back into my 20s. And I decided that I would take what I had learned from leadership through all those experiences and put them together in the form of a menu of services that I could provide to aspiring leaders or those who are in leadership positions and wanting to up their game, and launched the company in 2001 and continue to serve nationally and internationally from here in Dallas.
You know, it's really fascinating, and we're always learning so much, too, because I think the fact that you're an author and that you've had an opportunity to really dig deep in your writings, I'd love to focus on your latest book today. It's the second edition of Leadership and the Power of Trust, which is so important, developing trust and maintaining trust. Exactly from your perspective, Dr. Mike, what is a high trust organization?
Well, to be a bit self-serving, I will use a term that is common throughout my book, and that is trust-centered leadership, a term which I also happen to have the trademark on. High-trust organizations are those who, whether they know the term trust-centered leadership or not, nonetheless practice leadership within a profile of creating high trust. And what is high-trust leadership? It's leadership that makes every decision against the backdrop of considering how the decision will impact the level of trust between the trust, first of all, in them as a leader, the trust between them and their people, the trust between people in the organization, and the trust between their organization and their external community that they are either serving or selling products to. So it's really putting trust in a strategic position where nothing is more important to us than to establish the personal, interpersonal, and corporate credibility of being a very high-trust environment. That being said, a high-trust culture is one that is free of the things that are impediments to trust. In the book, I talk about five things people have to feel in order to trust. And this is true in any organization of any size and at any time in history. For people to trust within an organization or to trust the organization that they are in, they have to feel safe, they have to feel informed, they have to feel respected, they have to feel valued, and they have to feel understood. And where those five prevail, there's a very high likelihood that you're going to have a high trust culture. And that high trust culture then is going to translate into distinctive benefits and positive outcomes that are not possible where trust is low. There are bottom line impacts that come from building a high trust culture.
That's so important. Like you say, trust is one of the most crucial parts of everything when in business, but also in life. It really, really is. And you have this true understanding and appreciation of it, which I think is tremendous. Another thing that is very important.
You know, one of the things that, just to build on what you've said, if you really reflect on the history of mankind, mm-hmm. Trust was probably the first social skill that we had to develop. Yes, there was the relationship between husbands and wives, but once you start forming communities, especially in the early eras where it were the organizations of communities, the organization of communities was largely around fishing, gathering kinds of livelihoods, that hunter who went out to stalk the game, kill it, bring it back, spending several days away, maybe weeks before returning, had to trust that the village back home was taking care of his family, was taking care of his property, was protecting those things of his that needed to be protected. So trust is the fundamental building block of all social relationships, and that extends then into the corporate world, into the business world. When trust breaks down, we become very dysfunctional as families, as societies, as communities. And so it's not just in business that trust is important. As you said, it's in every aspect of life.
It really is, absolutely. And I'm glad you added that extra piece to it, because that just caps it off so eloquently. You know, another thing, too, is clear communication, not just communication, but clear communication. From your perspective, Dr. Mike, how does clear communication or the lack of it actually impact trust?
It has a very direct impact in perhaps some ways that people don't normally think about it. Remember that a few moments ago I started off my list of five things people have to feel with their need to feel safe. And that's not just physically safe, it is also psychologically and emotionally safe. They've got to sense that if they are honest and forthright in what they believe or what they think, they're not going to be ostracized or marginalized or punished in some way for expressing themselves. They've got to feel safe if they're going to speak up. And so, in one sense, trust precedes communication because I'm only going to be open in my communication with those I trust. But at the same time, when communication is not what it should be, the trust will very quickly dissipate. And the reason for that is because of a fundamental drive that all of us as human beings have. We talked a while ago about trust being the building block of all societies, even the most primitive ones. In terms of our own personal drives, there is no drive in our existence that is deeper than the drive to make sense of things, the drive to understand why things happen. And as soon as our children get old enough to put words together in sentences, they start driving us crazy with the question, why? It's not that they just started thinking of that. They have been thinking about it for some time, but they finally have the facility of language to put the question to the world and maybe understand it. From that point forward, all the way through life, when things happen that we can't explain, we feel a compulsion to figure out why. It turns out that when we cannot answer the question why, we have to come up with an explanation that satisfies us, and we do that through speculation. We speculate what must have happened or what was really going on. The interesting thing is, speculation, for a variety of psychological reasons, I believe, but speculation tends to focus on things that are likely to be adverse for me rather than advantageous for me. I'm never going to be in a corporate setting where someone says, you know, Mike, the executive committee has been meeting behind closed doors for 3 hours every afternoon this week. I bet something good's really about to happen around here. No, if the executive committee is meeting behind closed doors for 3 hours, I'm pretty sure what's coming is not something that's necessarily all that advantageous to me. Speculation tends toward the adverse possibilities that lie before. That raises anxiety. As the anxiety runs unchecked, it then turns into fear, and we've just lost that sense of safety that is a necessary building block for trust. Now, that being said, the only way we can disarm speculation is through clear, precise, consistent, timely communication. Because people are going to interpret what they see, what they observe, what they hear. We need to be in control of how they interpret it by being sure that we give them the information they need that banishes a temptation to move into speculation, so that speculation then becomes truth in their mind, and that truth is counterproductive to harmony within the organization.
That's so important. It's, again, clear communication, trust, that interconnected nature of the two essential, and you're very good at establishing both, and that's why you're so successful, Dr. Mike, in many different levels and many arenas of life. There is a chapter in your book on the economics of trust. Let's discuss how a lack of trust has an impact on the bottom line, people might just think of it as relationships and communication, but there is a sort of post-haste after effect. If there is a lack of trust, that can actually impact the bottom line, right?
Well, of course, and the reason is that all of the things that we call the hard aspects of a company's performance or an organization's performance depend on the quality of relationships. If the relationships are not strong, the company's productivity, the company's morale, the company's balanced approach to questions that are important to their customers, all those things are going to be damaged. We forget that the building blocks of great companies are not the machinery they have, the intellectual property they own, the marketing acumen which they possess. Ultimately, their power is the power of their people, and strong relationships multiply the impact that any individual has. You know, especially in the modern world, we know that the power and influence and impact of the individual is often curtailed if they do not have a team that is helping them accomplish their full potential. So we know who invented the telephone, but who invented email? We know who invented the airplane. Who invented the space shuttle? Modern technology and modern productivity are so complex that they have to have a team working together to bring them about. And teams are only as strong as the relationships within them. Therefore, the emphasis on trust in relationships then has a direct bearing on productivity, retention, morale. When I was writing the first edition of the book, I was looking at various consulting firms who had studied the relationship between trust and the overall economic performance of the company. One of those was a company that surveyed 7,500 workers across a number of industries trying to identify how high the trust within the organization was. And then they studied the economic performance of those companies. What they found was that companies that had high levels of trust, on average, gave a 43% higher return to their investors than those who had low trust. Now, that's a staggering number. And one of the reasons that it is so high is because in high trust organizations, there's a lot more collaboration. There's a lot more we thinking and a lot less I thinking. There's higher retention rate. We forget that in low trust cultures where people are not motivated to stick around because they don't really trust the environment, every time someone walks out the door, the bottom line is being impacted by the cost of finding their replacement. I had an interesting experience along these lines as I was putting the first edition together all 15, 16 years ago. I happened to be meeting with a very high-powered attorney here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, meeting with him for breakfast several times a month to talk about some career decisions he was trying to make. And this is a man whose billing number each year has a lot of zeros after the first number, in a firm that has lots of zeros after the first number. And we were talking about some of the ideas in the book, and I mentioned that the cost of turnover is adverse to the bottom line. And before I got to that point, though, he broke in and said, you know, I don't think your thesis is correct, because I can tell you, in my firm, the partners are cutthroat. We don't have much trust with one another. We are always watching out for number one first, And you may not like it, but that's the way our culture works. And yet we have never been more profitable in our life than we are right now. We are making money just hand over hand. And I said, and how much attrition rate do you have? And he sort of rolled his eyes and said, well, it's pretty high. And I said, and when a top performing attorney, not yet a partner, but a top performer, leaves your organization, how much does it cost you to replace that person? And he studied it a while and he said, well, by the time we pay the search firm and go through everything, probably about $300,000. And I just happened to know that at that particular time in this market, that was about the average replacement cost for a top performing attorney, $300,000 to go through the process and not be able to bill for the work that someone would have been doing if they were in position to do it, all of those things. And I said, so every time somebody walks out on you, you take $300,000 off your bottom line. How much bigger would that bottom line be if you stopped the turnover? And he took a deep breath. He said, man, we've never thought about it that way. But we need to think about it that way. Building a high-trust environment where people come and stay, and we not only save ourselves the cost of the replacement investment, but we also have at our fingertips a workforce that is well-versed in what we do and understands our customers and is comfortable with our culture because they've been here long enough, they have acclimated to it. All of those things add to productivity, they add to profitability, and they add to innovation. There are ongoing studies now in that neuroscience is a major interest on the impact of trust on our performance as individuals, just from a neurological standpoint, but also the impact of trust on organizations. One of the people who's doing a lot of that research is a fellow named Paul Zak, and he has written in Harvard Business Review about what they have found about the relationship between high levels of trust and performance. And one of the things that he found is that companies with high trust have far less burnout among their members. Their workers are 76% more engaged. They have 50% higher productivity. Just think what those things would do to the output that an organization can create. So, yes, high trust does have a definite economic benefit. I don't really build the book around that concept, but I, as you say, I've got a chapter in there to let those who see this not as really a bottom line issue to gain the perspective that my lawyer friend got when I put that question to him over breakfast 15, 16 years ago.
Mm. Wow, that's, you know, that's really amazing. And one of the things, what would you say are some of the things that get in the way of developing and establishing and maintaining trust? We would assume that that's something that would be an automatic, but from your expertise in working with so many different individuals and groups and companies over the years, what are some of the key things that sort of impede the development and effective maintenance of trust?
It depends on where you're talking about trust. If you're talking about trust between a manager and an employee, that's got one set of factors that have to be taken care of well. If it's trust between the employee and the overall organization, that's still another set of considerations. If it's trust between a worker and his or her colleagues, that's still another dimension of trust. So, just looking at those as a whole, the things that the thing that is most important in the manager's relationship with workers is for a manager to be able to communicate that he or she really cares for the people that report to that manager. There was a study done across over 100 industries in which a consulting firm that does much of the same kind of work I do asked hundreds and hundreds of employees how they determined whether they trusted the company. And before they began the survey, they sat down as a team and listed what they thought they would get by way of response. After they had conducted the survey, compiled the results, they then began to evaluate how accurately they had forecast what their findings would be. And it turned out that they were pretty accurate in anticipating the responses they would get, except for one thing. And that one thing was no lower than number three in any organization, no lower than number five in any organization. Most it was three and above. And overall it was number two. And that was a manager who really cares for me. People project on the larger organization their immediate relationship with their manager. So in building trust, we do not trust people who do not care for us. When they do care for us, in a world where more and more of us are treated just as numbers or another person in line rather than as an individual that is valuable and treasured, when people care for us, whether they're managers, colleagues, senior executives, then it's a lot easier for me to trust. Then alongside that is consistency in the standards you espouse and the standards you practice. The inconsistency between espoused values and the way we practice our day-to-day decision-making and carry out day-to-day accountability is probably one of the biggest danger areas in that we can lose trust quickly if we're not consistent between what we espouse as values, what the company holds out as its values, and how we actually perform. And that, I would say, pretty much applies across the board in all of our working relationships. I know our time's getting away, so I won't go any further with that, but if we just became a more caring and a caring community and a community with greater consistency between our espoused values and the way we behave, we would go a long way in strengthening trust just by taking those two initiatives.
Our very special guest today as we continue our exclusive series on Close-Up Radio is Dr. Michael Armour. Dr. Michael Armour is an expert in leadership development. Matter of fact, his flagship entity, Strategic Leadership Development International, and his later Perfect Services to help companies and individuals achieve peak performance, some of which we've been discussing here on this episode of Close-Up Radio today. Also, the author of and a very exciting opportunity for you to partake in this in terms of really soaking up the material that he has put together. He's been writing for a long time. He's releasing the second edition of his most widely read book in corporate America, Leadership and the Power of Trust. And we've been talking about trust and clear communication quite in-depthly on this episode of the program. You could go to the website, too, and that is www.leaderperfect.com, leaderperfect.com to connect with Dr. Mike and also learn more about how you can get the books and all the other incredible things that he offers, which are varied and many. Dr. Mike, thanks for joining us here once again on the program. Looking forward to the continued conversation next week as well. Always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure for me, too, and I also look forward to visiting with you next week at this time.
You keep up the extraordinary work. He's got a very busy schedule, gang, so we're so honored to be able to have at least 30 minutes a week with him here exclusively on Close Up Radio. Thank you to Dr. Michael Armour, and thank you to you for tuning in to this episode of Close Up Radio, the service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television Radio. My name is Jim Masters. I'm your host, and we wish you a terrific continued fabulous day. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another incredible guest from around the world right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, take care and be well, and thanks for joining us.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.